Sportsnet.com.
Good afternoon, Pierre. How are you?
You know what? I was really good until I got a text about 15 minutes ago about Robbie Fabbri of the St. Louis Blues.
Yeah, if you think you're having a tough training camp, Pierre's about to fill you in on a really, really, really tough story.
Well, he's done for the rest of this year, so he's done for the year, but he was done for half of last year. He played on a line last year with Yuri Laterra and Vladdy Tarasenko. I'll never forget doing the game in St. Louis, the outdoor game, and how great Robbie and Vladdy were together. Just, it was instantaneous chemistry. It was phenomenal to watch. It was just artistry on ice. This is a tremendous young player. I said to Rod, now we're talking back-to-back ACL repairs. I just don't see how this has a good ending. He's played a little less than 150 career games. Terribly tragic story. Terribly.
Yeah. Well, he does have age going for him.
He does, Mitch, but that's where the league is going, and the fact that it's, you know, the way it's happened now, that's tough. I mean, I'm touching wood as I speak to you, and I'm hoping like heck that he can get through this. I think that young man is one of the better young people I've seen come into the game in terms of ability to really grow as a player and be a high-impact player, and now I just don't know. I just don't know.
Yeah, and for those who weren't paying attention, this there was a warning sign, right, what, 3-4 days ago where they said he was going to miss camp, but they weren't sure it was this bad, and now it's this. It's the worst-case scenario, basically.
I was there Sunday night in Pittsburgh, and their entire management group was there, and they said to me, we're not sure, but we're keeping our fingers crossed, but it's not looking good, and I just was hoping and praying that it would be better, and obviously it's not, so it's really, you know, it's a message to young players. Don't put all your eggs in one basket, because you just never know when something like this is going to happen. And make sure you have a backup plan. If you think you're that good and you have a chance to play in the league, make sure you have a backup plan, because our sport is very unforgiving, unbelievably unforgiving.
Another significant development off the ice today, the Board of Governors, Pierre, has approved a rule change adding a minor penalty for an unsuccessful coach's challenge on offside. So instead of costing you a timeout, it's going to cost you a power play.
And so now more duress on video coaches than ever before. And there are a lot of really good guys in the league that do this for a living, and it is hard. It is a hard job. And they have direct communication to the bench, and sometimes they get different camera angles compared to what people at home see, so they're able to pick out some of these flaws in the offside call. But there's gonna—I know the head coach will take the blame for it publicly, but I can tell you internally, a lot of these video coaches are going to be really heavily scrutinized, unbelievably scrutinized.
Well, this is great. I mean, you better be damn sure if you're going to cause a delay in the game and slow things down, you better be positive.
If it's ticky-tacky and marginal and it's blurry, it's not worth it.
Yep.
No, it's not. That's a great point, and I totally agree with what you men just said. I would just tell you, that's why I brought up the video coaches first. More times than not, and you'd have to get the numbers, Rod, for me, I believe that they have been right in terms of challenging.
Well, because they have that time, right? It's kind of odd. You know, I'm in favor of it in baseball. I don't like to see the manager putting the hand up to the umpire. Just give me a minute here while we check the replay. Optically, it doesn't look good. They should figure out a way to do this better or quicker somehow. But,
agreed.
You know, in hockey, they're sitting up there. They have it. It's almost instantaneous, the replay.
Yep. No, I agree. You're right on. Right on.
All right. The game tonight, once again, Victor Mete will be under the spotlight. This is a B or C Leafs group of forwards as opposed to the other night. You caused quite a stir, as you do occasionally, Pierre, with your passionate comments of what you think the Habs should do. And here was Bob McKenzie picking up on some of that this morning with Connor McKenna and the gang.
You know, I agree part of what Pierre's saying. In terms of, you know, not rushing kids and what have you. But I think you've got to let things play out. And right now, based on the way camp has gone, Mete deserves to be there. And you don't want to get caught in a thing where you burn the first year of his entry level. But it's not that big a deal, to be honest, especially for a team like the Canadiens that don't have a million guys come out of entry level in 2 or 3 years anyways. So I wouldn't worry so much about the 9 games, and I'd worry more about whether it's just the right thing for him to be in the NHL or not, and that kid will dictate that with the way that he plays.
Just a part of what Bob McKenzie said. Now, in fairness, Bob was not presented the entire conversation, which is hard to do. Because you did also outline a possible scenario where it would work out, right?
Yeah, well, I would say that the truth of the matter is we agree. The biggest thing for that young man, I've seen it fail so often in Montreal. If you want me to rehash it, I will.
No, it's fine. It's fine.
Okay. So I can't make it up. I mean, they did it. I didn't do it. I'm just relating the facts. I think the biggest issue is that people have to stop falling in love with young players that can get them, those young players, into trouble. And I'm not saying this player will, because I don't believe that. But I also know that at his body type and who they want him to play with, I'm not sure that that is going to behoove or play to the strength of the player going forward, which is what I told you 2 days ago, over the course of an 82-game schedule. So we'll see. I mean, do what you want to do. All I can do is just give you chapter and verse of every time I've said, don't do that. And we'll see how it plays out. I think my record's pretty good.
So let me try to dig deeper here, because now we're getting into the nitty-gritty part of training camp. After tonight, there'll be, what, 2 games left for the Montreal Canadiens. And doesn't this, and again, you know, David Schlemko, we haven't seen him, and that wasn't part of the equation. And I think this late in camp, I think it's fair to say they'd still be looking at Noah Juulsen, at least looking at Noah Juulsen if he hadn't got hurt. But it is what it is here, and isn't this just a glaring spotlight on going on to a second year without a real partner for Shea Weber, an ideal partner for Shea Weber? Is that fair?
yeah, that's more than fair.
I mean, they went from four guys a year ago.
How much do you want to relive? I mean, then all of a sudden I get painted with the brush that, oh, he just hates the Canadiens. No. I don't like some of the vision for the future for the team. But I didn't do this. You didn't do this. This is old news. This is rehashed old news. We talked about this last year when they did the deal.
Okay, so let's move on to the, because there's no concern about Shea Weber. There's no concern for Shea Weber. So let's go a little deeper tonight specifically. You got three guys. To me, Mark Streit, unless he falls down and can't move, he's the seventh defenseman to start the season.
Well, we said that when he got signed. Okay, keep going.
So you're talking about Eric Gelinas, who's in camp on a PTO.
One-dimensional player, power play point shot. That's it.
Brandon Davidson, who Julian said we know he can play better. He liked what he saw last spring, but he doesn't like what he's seen so far.
He's had a terrible camp.
Yes, he has.
What it is, terrible camp. And I like the player a lot, but he's had a terrible camp.
Joe Morrow, who's looks like he's inherited Nikita Nesterov's issues in his own end.
Do you remember me telling you this stuff, Rod? You want to get the tapes from weeks ago? Joe Morrow, there's a reason why he's been drafted by Pittsburgh, played in Dallas, moved to Boston. There's a reason why. Claude knows this stuff.
So why are they... So here's the question.
Because they're up against it. They don't have any players.
But why wouldn't they play the kid they signed out of the KHL?
Because he's not that good. Playing in the KHL and playing in the NHL are two different things. You're playing on a rice rink that's 200 by 100 when you're supported by forwards that come back and there's no board play. Playing in the NHL is completely and utterly different. I told you that when they signed him. Like, this stuff is all rehashed history.
Have you guys seen him? Like, have you seen him play to know that he's not good? Jerebek?
It's not that he's not good. Well, that's not the point.
Well, you just said he's not that good.
It's a different game. It's a completely and utterly different game. Ask anybody. You know what? What you need to do is watch some KHL games.
No thanks.
On on the computer.
No, thanks. I did. I did.
Okay. And what's your takeaway?
It's not good. It's not good. Okay. It's like exhibition hockey. It's like practice games.
Everything's to the outside. There's not a lot of physical confrontation. Guys that can dangle and stick handle look really good.
Way too much ice. Anybody who keeps, and I understand why people think the ice surface should be expanded a little bit in the NHL because the players have grown while the rinks stay the same. I understand that. But if you want European-size ice, you watch the KHL and come back and tell me you still think there should be more ice.
Totally agree. Way to go. Bang on.
There should be a little more ice, but not like that. Okay.
The Finnish model is the best one. Finnish model is a hybrid. It's instead of 85 feet wide, it's between 90 and 93 feet wide. And that's one of the reasons why Finnish players can make the adjustment a lot easier to the NHL game than a lot of other European countries.
Yeah, no, I've seen Jerebek play twice live now in exhibition hockey. And you definitely see why they wanted to bring him over. He skates well. He handles the puck well. Pretty good first pass. But you can tell he needs time to adapt. He needs to go to the American Hockey League for maybe half the season, learn how the game is played here, learn the different dimensions, and then maybe you could revisit this. But I don't think he's ready to play an everyday shift in the NHL.
So here's the question I have, because that is so well said by Mitch Gallo. So I'll ask Mitch Melnick this. So you have a player like that who can make seven figures playing in the KHL and ride on private planes, or he can play and be home, or he can play in the American Hockey League and make maybe 100, maybe 150, I don't know. You'd have to look up his number, and ride on buses.
So what does that say about the KHL, or what does that say about him?
No, it's not about – it's just the reality of what older players coming out of that league, what do you think they're going to choose if presented with the scenario that Mitch Gallo just brought up? Because Mitch is right on. He's right on.
So he's going to go back is what you're saying.
I don't know that. I'm just bringing it up. What would most guys do? What would you do?
If my goal was to play in the National Hockey League, I'd play in Laval and see how it goes. This is not a deep defense. I think I could play I would think, if I had confidence in my own abilities, that I could play my way into the lineup, force my way in.
And I hope he's thinking like you are.
So what does all this say about the task that lies ahead for J.J. Daniel, for example, whose job it's going to be to minimize the risks among what's going to be most likely potentially a weak defense corps?
Well, no, matchups are going to be important. It's not just on defense either. That's unfair to J.J. Matchups are going to be important up front. Claude is really good at establishing matchups. He's very, very good at that. So that shouldn't be a concern. Forwards, especially with the in-zone coverage that they're trying to play. We talked about it the other day. Goalies are going to see a lot of point shots just because of the way they're playing. You can see support mode down low. They're trying to insulate their defense. That's really apparent. So point shots are going to come through. It's the second chances. Carey's going to have to be really good with his rebound control. But matchups shouldn't be a problem. Claude's really good at establishing those.
So, you know, Sergio Momessa was talking about this a bit on the broadcast, that he was upset that the Canadiens were playing embarrassingly right now. And that he realizes it's preseason, but at the same time, the coach wants to establish a system. And you want to have some kind of momentum going into the regular season. You want to be losing every single game and not scoring any goals. And he was wondering, at what point does Claude Julien actually get in there and start hammering these guys?
It's coming. Once they get their roster, it'll be coming. One of the things that I admire so greatly about the Montreal Canadiens and the Molson family in particular, they don't editorialize people that work on the air. And I was proud to say that I did that for almost 3 years there, what Sergio was doing. And I think Sergio does a great job with Dan. I really do. I listen to them as much as I can. And they're not editorialized. And they're telling the truth. They're basically telling you what I've been trying to tell you. So I really respect, it takes a lot of courage to do what Sergio's doing, and he's done it, and I really respect the Canadiens because they don't editorialize. Try doing that in some other NHL cities. They would tell you right away, don't do that ever again or you're not going to have a job.
I think part of Sergio's issue the other night was not only the lopsided nature of the game, but Brendan Gallagher dropping his gloves with Zach Hyman. He's got plates in his hands. We all know how mangled his hands were a year ago. If you're Claude Julien, your Steph, he's had a discussion with him, right?
Absolutely. And if he hasn't, then Mark Bergevin has. You can't. That's one of the reasons why I get upset. You know, who is going to insulate these players? Who's going to present the message? How are they going to make sure that this doesn't happen when it really matters during the course of an NHL regular season? I know you're mad at me, Mitch, but I'm telling you the truth.
What? I'm not mad at you. No, no. Why would I be mad?
I'm just telling you the truth, okay, as I see it.
I'm not mad at you.
This is not. No, I know, but listen to
no,
me.
No,
but
you said I'm mad at you. I'm not mad at
you. Oh, I think you are. I think you see the Canadiens as a home ice team, and they're not.
No, I never said that. How can I say that? I've seen 40 minutes of preseason. I want to wait until the season starts. I want to see what late moves might be made. I want to see what this team looks like, and then I'll throw out what I think might happen. I think they're a playoff team with Carey Price healthy and playing 60 games. What I really care about is the playoffs. That's all I really care about.
Everything you just said I agree with, except I don't think they're a home ice playoff team, and that's what I've been saying.
Okay.
I think they're a depth playoff team. That's how I see them. And you see, even though it's preseason, you see the flaws of this group. And if you don't, then you're blinded by loyalty. And blind loyalty does not work in anything. It does not work.
The spotlight, in addition to the blue line issues that we've discussed before, we're done with Pierre. Answers from Space with Billy coming up shortly.
Yeah, I see this as one of my last opportunities to try and make play the way I know I can play. It's like I said, it's a little bit frustrating and just trying to find my game here. And like I said tonight, I'm playing with two really good NHL players, and I want to capture this opportunity and run with it.
So, Pierre, if you had a conversation before Michael McCarron hit the ice tonight, he's centering Andrew Shaw and Alex Galchenyuk. You heard him. He's frustrated. He hasn't had a good camp. What would that conversation be?
I'm not allowed to swear on the air.
You'd light a fire under his rear end.
He and I would get very intense and very physical in a short period of time. It would it'd be something that I think would be great reality TV, but probably wouldn't be very impressive for people watching because they'd say there's no way people do that. But I can tell you they do. It would be physical. It would be challenging, and it would be one of those things where if you're going to be a one-hit wonder, then don't even waste your time coming here. That's what it would be.
Wait a minute. You, if you're a coach, you're not going to get physical with them.
I would get right up against him and say, "Come on, man! Like, how big are you?
Hey,
can you play big for me? Can you get after it a little bit? Oh, my Mitch!
Hey, I have to because people are going.
There's stuff that goes on in rooms that people don't want to know.
There are people right now who do not believe that, and I will tell you, and I know this because the man himself told me this story. Pat Burns, God bless him. In between periods of one night when he was having a really tough time in the room prior to the start of the period, actually went up to Matthew Schneider, grabbed him by the jersey, grabbed a handful of Matthew Schneider's jersey and yelled at him, "Are you even freaking trying?" That happened.
I'm not going to use players' names because I know how Pat coached. And Pat was I'm just, as you know, over years, I'm a huge Pat fan, and we had some unbelievable conversations near the end of his life, so I'm really appreciative of that. That happens a lot, just so people understand. This is not like what you think. You know, it's a little bit different maybe from the 80s and the 90s. Ask some of the players that played for Keenan in Philadelphia or New York. Ask them what it was like.
That's really old school.
Hey, ask some of the guys that play for Brian Sutter or Brent Sutter or Daryl Sutter. Ask them.
So I think you just got a glimpse into occasionally what you have to do with a player. And you hope that it works. You hope you're pressing the right button because if it doesn't, you lose him and the organization loses him.
And then you eventually get fired as a coach. I mean, That's part of it too. So you got to calculate now with McCarron. You want to, like, Michael, you were drafted in the first round because you are a big body. You can't play small. You got to play big. you know, and if you can't do that, I'm really disappointed because you're killing every opportunity you have. We're going to give you every opportunity to play. You got to do something, man.
7 o'clock tonight, Dan Robertson and Sergio Momesso with the call. Campbell and Gallo here will keep you company between periods and on the Del Mar postgame show, and we'll talk about it some more tomorrow. Thanks as always, Pierre.
It's such a soft sport. Everybody's so nice. It's amazing.
There's still a lot of work to be done and to be fixed, but you know, that's what preseason is for. But to be 0-5 at this point is not what we want. And preseason or not, we need wins, and we want wins to feel good about ourselves going into the year.